Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. We're going to hope in a half hour or so we can get our friend on from over at the Running of the Bulls. But right now, I don't want to waste any more time. We have on the phone, waiting to chat with us, Carlene Pettit. Is it Pettit or Petite, Carlene?
It's Pettit, but I used to be 5'12 until I started settling a little bit in my older age. So Petite has always been nice, but technically Pettit.
Carlene Pettit is an airline pilot and just a fascinating background story on you, Carlene, that I want to get into in a little bit. But we reached out to you and found you because of this news, possible news, I guess, about Amelia Earhart. This History Channel documentary is going to come out on Sunday night. And there was a photo found in the U.S. National Archives where people are saying maybe it is Amelia Earhart after all these years, that maybe she didn't die in a crash. Although there were many theories that she didn't die in the crash, that she died stranded on a deserted island. But this theory would say that she was captured by the Japanese and possibly lived out her life in captivity. Have you followed Amelia Earhart throughout your life, Carlene?
No, I actually haven't. I think, I'm not the expert on Amelia Earhart, because I think, you know, we just assume since women pilots or female pilots, we got into that because of Amelia.
Sure.
But she actually has been such an icon because of her courage and what she did, and just the fact that she was the first, you know, the first woman to make an effort to fly around the world like that. And then her disappearance made it mysterious. But I think it's fascinating. And I think what fascinates me more about this whole situation, finding this photo, is that they knew and somebody knew and they've hidden it this long.
Well, I guess that maybe we'll find out. But that's the question. Did they know? Did somebody, whoever, you know, they have this photo in the archives, but it doesn't say on the back Amelia Earhart and Navigator. So I guess we'll have to wait and find out, you know, did they know that or think that? And we don't even know still, but the theory is that it's Amelia Earhart. But it is a good question. If somebody in, you know, maybe the government just kept this top secret for years, they knew she'd been captured, maybe it would have been some international incident, maybe she really was fine. Who knows? Who knows what the story is? I hope that there is some fire to the smoke, because, you know, this photo was released to drum up interest in this History Channel documentary. And I hope there's a little something to it, because wouldn't that be really cool to find out what actually did happen? And, you know, I've talked to guests about Amelia Earhart before, and a lot of the theory is that they did crash land but survived, but then were deserted and couldn't get a hold of anybody and probably eventually perished from starving to death or whatever. And because, you know, there have been pieces found or, you know, remnants and things like that found on islands that sound like they could have come from her plane. And also there was a bone found on that island and it was dismissed as being a man's. And so it was relegated away to history. The bones have been lost, but they still have the measurements. And now they're saying, well, she had really long arms. That could have been her. So there's always some new theory, it seems, coming out about Amelia Earhart. So it'd be fascinating to see what happens when we see this documentary on Sunday night. Carlene, you've been a pilot for how long?
Oh, 38 years now.
38 years. So
yeah.
You a professional pilot, or that's when you first got your license at a really young age? When did you start?
I started flying commercial, like, because when I was 22 years old. So let's date me. I'm 55 now. And so, yeah, so the 38 years is when I actually went out and got my pilot license and started flying, you know, but it's been quite a journey. I've worked for 8 different airlines, flown all over the world, you know, where her airplane went down in the Marshall Islands. I was a navigator helping a group from Hainan Airlines bring an airplane from Seattle, Washington, and fly it, you know, to China. And so we landed. One of our fuel stops was on Majuro, and which is just a little, all it is an island, and they have the water tank. It's fast, it's beautiful, but it's a runway. You taxi in and one way in and one way out, and you've got to make your appointment to land, and you're out in the middle of the Pacific, and you're taking off, and the waves are splashing over the runway. I mean,
wow. It's as a refueling station, and that's it?
That's pretty much what that is. It's just, that's all it is. And then I actually, because I write an aviation blog and I'm an author also, so I was looking, because I know I posted some pictures of it on my blog. I was looking to see if I could give you directions how to get to it. But if you type in Majuro, what pops up is the guy who's in charge of the you know, it wasn't a control tower. It's just a, you know, a communication station. But he's in charge. If you look at this guy, it's so funny. You walk up these broken down old stairs. It's like a little hut out in the, it's pretty unique. So, yeah, go to CarlenePettit.com and type in Mazur on the search box, and you'll see what kind of facility they had out there. But, yeah, it's interesting when you fly over the Pacific because you don't really realize the magnitude and how big these oceans are, and yeah, that you're just a little speck of a nothing out there. It's just for miles.
And for more than just miles, right? For hundreds and thousands of miles at a time. Does that ever, when you're a pilot over something like that, where if something went wrong, there's very little you could do except for try your best to land a plane on the ocean. Does that make you more nervous at all when you're flying, when you have limited options if something goes wrong, or is it not something you even end up thinking about?
No, because in today we don't have limited options. I shouldn't say don't have limited. They're limited than if you had all your engines, but we're always able to make land. And, you know, it's kind of interesting if you hear people say, oh, I'll never do that. You know, my saying is never say never, because there was a time before we were allowed to fly two engines over the ocean. You know, we're flying these three-engine, four-engine aircraft, and they're coming in what they call ETOPS, extended range operations, where they're going to save fuel, save money, and we're going to go from four engines to two engines, mm-hmm. from three engines to two engines. And I remember years ago, every pilot said, I'll never fly an airplane over the ocean with only two engines. You know, and okay, now that's all we fly, basically. But no, this ETOPS, extended range, we don't dispatch unless we can get to shore and get to an airport. Yeah, they don't just send airplanes out there and say, okay, go fly, and if something happens, you don't have anywhere to go. We are, you know, we've got enough fuel, you know, to turn. Either there's a equal time point, and we're going to turn back and get back to where we came, or we're going to press on and go to an alternate if something happens. So it has to be pretty catastrophic, you know, something very unusual. Because even losing, you know, when we're flying these over with two engines, even losing one engine's very unusual. You know, it doesn't happen that often, especially while you're in route. So you may lose an engine on takeoff, but it's unusual. I mean, it happens.
So
you know, airplanes are going to break.
If you were over the middle of the ocean and you lost one engine, would you be able to make it all the way to some, either turn back or head to wherever you were heading or find somewhere?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we're just not allowed to dispatch. It is amazing if you think about the size of these aircraft and what they're capable of.
Yeah, no kidding. So in all these years you've been a pilot, first off, as a woman pilot, when you started flying commercially years ago, were you a rarity? Were there a lot of female pilots at the time? And what was that like? Was it a very male-dominated world at the time?
Oh, yeah. It's like, you know, they say, and I started doing this women in aviation, or the fly it forward, giving girls free flights, because about 10 years ago, there were only 6% women were flying, and 15 years ago there were 3%. So they haven't grown that much. But
yeah,
I was actually the first female pilot and the only female pilot at a couple of my airlines. I've been at eight. Northwest Airlines had the most when I was working there. But it was a rarity. It was interesting. And a lot of the guys, you know, what's really sad, you know, if you have any listeners out there, any young ladies who want to be pilots, I say join all the women groups. You know, we have the 99s or general aviation, and we've got the women in aviation, and we've got ISA 21 for when you get to the commercial, when you're a commercial pilot. But I didn't do that because I wanted to break through this male-female paradigm of, you're a female pilot. And I thought, no, I just want to be a pilot. I don't want to be categorized as a female pilot. And I'll never forget early on, I was flying for a company called Evergreen. We're flying freight in the middle of the night. And I remember this captain looking at me and he said, oh, do you belong to that women's group? You know, just real sarcastically. And I said, no, of course not. You know, in hindsight, I wish I would have, because there's a lot of support. There really is. And I say, you know what, when you're pressing through life, we've got enough challenges. Reach out to anyone who can give you a helping hand and give you support. And if nothing more, just encouragement to be there for you and let you know that you can make it work. So, but it's been an absolute interesting road. And, you know, as far as the sexism in the airplane, they used to have in these old Boeing aircraft, little cubby hole. You can like fold. We have to check the rope, for example. They had a rope up in this little cubby on the 727 where if something happened and you had to, well, we're on the ground, but you have to evacuate your aircraft. You hang on this rope, climb down. But so there's certain things they have to open up. And so this old 727, they had, you know, being I was the only woman there, they had all these naked pictures. Somebody hit the Playboy magazine and cut out all these pictures, had all these naked women and all these little cubbies. So you're checking your man, you're checking this compartment, there's this naked woman there. And so naked women don't bother me. I grew up in a family of 5 to 5 girls. I had 4 sisters. So it's like, you know, it doesn't bother me. But what I did is I went out and got a, you know, sitting in the middle of a sorts, and I went and got a Playgirl magazine. And so one night I cut out all the little naked, I didn't even give them the whole man. I just kind of cut out the parts I thought appropriate. And I replaced all their women one night, you know. And so we're flying and going to check, and the captain pulls, I never forget, he folds us down, and he freezes when he sees this picture staring at him. And then he kind of chuckles a little bit, and he looks at me, and he says, "Touché." And I go, "What? How do you know it's me? I checked that guy in the back seat. It could have been him." you got to make your friend when you're flying in the middle of night freight. I have to tell you a bit.
I imagine you do. You know, you mentioned if women are getting into flying. Actually, a good family friend of ours, their 16-year-old daughter is taking flying lessons right now. And she's out at the little Lake in the Hills airport by where we live. And she's taking lessons in a small plane and is thinking about possibly pursuing a career in aviation. And I was thinking about that the other day and thinking, I wonder for anybody, but especially for a female pilot, like once you had your kids and things like that, how difficult is the life of a pilot, a commercial pilot, when you have a family that you're raising? Because I imagine for the most part, you have to be away a couple of days at a time. Is that how it still generally works for pilots?
Oh, yeah. And the sad thing is when you first start out, you have the worst schedule, of course. You make the least amount of money, so you don't get help. And so, it is a challenge. But I had my children I had my children young, and I had planned on waiting until I got that first job, and then until I upgraded, and so I had this great plan, and then I met the man I wanted to spend the rest of my life with, and decided to have the kids first, and was going to wait until they got into school before I started flying to help balance that a little bit. But you know, then a job popped up and I got offered an opportunity of a lifetime, and I'm looking at my husband and I'm like thinking, you know, because my kids were 2, 3, and 4 at the time. And then I had my husband, you know, well, can him as another kid, you know, I say that lovingly and jokingly, but, I'm looking at this thing and how can I leave this family? What can I do? And I'll never forget when he said, "Honey, opportunities come along once in a lifetime. If you want to be a pilot, we will make this work." And so we did make it work, but there are unique challenges for women. And we're actually, you know, one of my retired girlfriends, retired airline captain, she was one of the first 5 at Northwest, and she's working because she can, because she's retired, and because they can't really nobody can really retaliate against her from making an effort. But she's working hard, and we're trying to get things changed in these airlines that help support women coming in if they want to have the children, if they need the time off. And it does take an effort fight, because if you think about it, you know, if we're only 6% of us are females, and most of us, you know, old timers like me, we've already had our family beyond the years. And so it takes us to help change the way for those new young ladies coming up, because it is an incredible career. And airlines, you know, we're looking at a pilot shortage. If there's only 6%, then we need to go. These airlines should be thinking outside the box and going out and making opportunities for, whether it's job sharing or giving, you know, enough time off to, you know, from maternity leave to help these women come in, because that's a huge job force that they could be accessing. But you know what, when we get off, have Jessica send me your friend's address, because I write aviation thrillers because I'm working on my PhD in aviation safety, and I'm seeing what's going on behind the scenes. And I'm thinking, I need to fix these things for these new people coming in. But I also wrote a motivation book, Flight to Success, and I would love to give a copy and just send it to your friend's daughter.
Okay, good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, of course, because it's, you know what, we're all in this together, and I think we learn by lessons from each other, and there's a support team out there for it to do. And it's a fabulous, absolutely fabulous career. It really is.
Is it a fabulous career? I wonder, because, you know, it was a very airline travel used to be such a glorified thing, as it was glamorous. It was this and that. And now whenever we talk about airline travel, it's about the, you know, the charging of the bags and the less room and everything else. And it seems like a real working job and not kind of the glamorous thing it used to be. How would you describe it for the pilots these days?
It is a working job, and it is not the illusion that it used to be that, oh, wow, you know, this is this big glamorous thing. But it's wonderful. It's a great career. You know, the reason why I host these flying events, and I've been doing this for 10 years, is because when I stepped in an airplane for the first time and took that first flight, and I'll never forget, I'm thinking, wow, they're going to pay me to do this, because I got hooked and I loved it. And so now I think, you know, and how do you know if you love something unless you do it? And I'm saying, kind of like, try everything, do everything you can. And so I host these flying events where we give young girls opportunity to get into, do something they never experienced. And the minute they step in that airplane, if you love it, if it's like, wow, this is so cool, then you got to do it, because then it is a fabulous career. But if you go into a career, whether it being a pilot or anything, thinking what you're going to get out of it, if you're just doing it for money, then you're not going to love it, because you are away from home. And it has downside. You're fatigued. You're away from home. You know, you're flying on the backside of the clock. Sometimes you don't get those, you know, think, oh, wow, I'm going to go lay over in Guam tonight. But it's a short night, and it's, you got to get up early, and you know, so it's not glamorous. But if you love it, it's a great opportunity. And then, you know, for having a family, you know, flight attendants, think about all the flight attendants are out there. They've got families,
right?
And they're still on our airplane, so that's not an issue. And you know, and then you have more time home when you do, because when you get at the beginning, when you're starting out, it's a struggle. You're flying a lot, but you know, you fly maybe an 8 to 10 day trip, and you have the rest of the time off. And when you are home, you're home 24, you know, hours full. You don't have to go every single day.
You get
weeks off at a time.
How does it work for most pilots these days? I imagine when you're starting out, you're flying the tougher regional routes on the smaller planes and flying day in, day out. But for most pilots who are younger, what would you say a standard schedule is like?
Well, it's they've got regulations now, so we can't fly them that much. But you know, for a regional carrier, for a younger pilot, you can pretty much give your life to this airline, because you're on reserve and you're probably flying, you know, maybe 7 days, get a couple days off, 5 days, get 2 days off, 5 days, couple days, you know. So it also depends where you go. Like when I started out, I actually started out at Evergreen flying a 727 freight, so I wasn't really regional. But that job gave me a week on, you know, a week off, or 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. And so I had 2 weeks off at a given time. And if you can back those up to each other, but for a regular regional job, they're pretty much flying you throughout the month. You're on call, which on reserve. So you may be home, and if they need you, they call you, which is kind of a nice duty when you get to the bigger international airplanes, because, you know, they're not calling you as much as they would a domestic system. So there's quite a bit of time off during that. But you know, like I said, you gotta love it. You gotta love what you're in, but that goes in for anything.
Sure,
you gotta just love your life, you know?
What's the dream job for a pilot? What's the route, or the, you know, what does every pilot say? Oh, I just want to do the China route. It's once a week. It's, you know, 2 days and done. Or what's like the ultimate job right now for a pilot?
You know what? I'm laughing, because the ultimate job for a pilot differs. It differs for anyone. You know, you get to a point in your life, you're going, okay, my ultimate job is, let me go out and fly 1 week international, and let me have the rest of the month off. Personally, for domestic versus international, I love international, because I like the longer routes, because I enjoy the longer layovers. Because my lifestyle, what I, you know, I'm working on my PhD right now, and so I'm always studying, I'm writing. And so when I started doing that, because of my longer routes and because of longer layovers. And so when I'm away from home, I'm thinking I'd like to be productive. And so it's enabled me to go back to school. It's enabled me to write novels, because I like the time. If I was flying a domestic schedule where they have 10 hours off at night, and I like to work out every day. So I talked to some of the junior pilots who are flying domestic, and I'm thinking, I can't do that lifestyle, because how would I get up and write for 2 hours and exercise for an hour and even eat and soak in my bubble bath for an hour? You know, it's like, I can't do that. And I don't have I need a longer layover for me personally. You know, that's me, you know, people yeah. who, you know, so it just depends. So ideally, I like the exotic locations. Send me anywhere over in Asia, you know, to Guam or Saipan or even Tokyo or Singapore, and they, you know, head me over that direction and give me a long layover. I'm a happy little clam.
Are the airlines pretty good about their how they take care of you guys when you have to travel, say, overseas, and then you have, like, if you were doing a flight to China tomorrow, and so you have this 12 or 14 hour flight, and then you land, when would they send you back? How long do you stay there before they then put you on a flight coming back?
Oh, they're going to put us back as quickly as they can keep sure. us in motion and working. But FAA regulations, you know, we can't do that. So you can pretty much expect when you're flying an international trip, you will have at least 24 hours off, at least 24, and sometimes a little bit longer, you know, and dealing with this fatigue issue, because, you know, the reality is even a passenger flying internationals could get off the plane and be fatigued. You know, you go on vacation, come home fatigued because your time zone changing. And the reality is, and, you know, hopefully I don't want to kill my layovers, but the reality is it would almost be better to have a little bit shorter layover. Because if you think about it, I'll say I land in an international base and I get in at 6 a.m. and you're exhausted because you've been flying all night. So you go to bed, right? And if you sleep all day, then you can't go to sleep all night, but you have an early morning departure. So it'd almost be better to have a little bit short, you know, if you could schedule it that way, but you can't. I mean, it's morning departures, evening, you know, out of Europe, and evening departures out of Asia, and it's just difficult to schedule. But sometimes that 24 hours, the full 20, if you just have 24 hours, you either need 24 or 48 and you get really acclimated. But, you know, the 24 hours, if you think about it, it's, and you got to fly exactly 24 hours later, it kind of is a little bit off. You learn to nap. You learn to get creative and take a little nap and then wake up and then try and go back to bed.
I was going
to
say, if it's 24 hours later, you don't really get to enjoy wherever you're at very much at all, do you? Because you're tired. You got to make sure you get your sleep, and you know, you got to get ready then for the next flight. And I imagine the travel back and forth to the airport.
Yeah. And so, so like what I would do, for me is I would fly somewhere, say, and go to sleep and take a nap, you know, and set my alarm for like 4 or 5 hours and make myself get up and then go explore the city, go hiking, go take a bike ride, go, you know, go to the beach, do whatever I'm going to do, get a bite to eat, and then try and get myself to go back to sleep, you know, at a reasonable time. So I'd get a good night's sleep before the flight.
Yeah.
And so I'd get that, you know, get that 8 hours and wake up early and go get a good workout before I, you know, flew. So you get used to it, though. You get used to scheduling and you try and figure it out.
Yeah.
No, but it's great. And I'll tell you what, every time, I'm not flying the 747 right now, but when I was, I can't tell you, every time I walked around that aircraft doing a pre-flight, I looked at it and, you know, it was just always such an awe-inspiring moment. You know, if you think about these huge aircraft that somebody, these engineers, these people made this stuff. They thought about this and they put these machines into the sky. And then when you're standing right below it to see, really embrace and feel how big they are. It's like, yeah, it's like awesome. And going, holy cow. And then every time I am in that cockpit and it's like you're looking out just at a sunrise. You know, how many people really ever have the opportunity
to see
just
that.
Go out and appreciate a sunrise? And then from that out, you know, from altitude and stuff, I've, you know, never a moment passes where I don't find some moment of gratitude every time I was in an airplane or walking around it or something. Now, trust me, when I'm going through with the passengers and we're dealing with security and stuff, you know, it's not too much fun, but I'll tell you, every time you get in that airplane and then also, you know, just think about it, knowing what we're doing, flying passengers, we're taking people to their joy, to their sorrow, to the new experience, to new world. We're connecting people all over the world. And it's, you know, it's quite interesting. It's kind of been a lost art. You know, you don't really get wings at the, you know, remember the old days, get on the airplane, they like to give you wings. Well, I make it a point every time, because I fly international, so we always have more than two pilots. So if I'm not first crew flying and I'll go out and do the walk around, I will stand at that door and greet every passenger coming on, give the kids and a lot of the adults wings, you know, and I greet them. Kind of twofold. I want to see who's going to be on the airplane, you know, for security measures. But I love greeting the passengers and walking them aboard and seeing who's back there. It connects you, you know, with all the security things. And we were locked behind that door and we don't get to get out and walk down the aisles and see the people anymore and during flight because of September 11th. Before we go, I still like to connect with those people because that's what it's all about. So
very cool. Carlene, I am out of time because we got to get to the news here, but what is the website people should visit for more information on you and the books you've written?
Yeah. Tell them to go to carlenepettit.com and that's KarlenePettit. And my aviation thrillers, you know, tell them to check those out. We've got a motivation book and even inspiration book for children, children's book too. So
very cool. Carlene, we'll talk again. Okay. I'd really love to hear more another time when we have more time.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone. Carlene Pettit. We'll chat more with her about airlines over the years. It's always good to have a good airline expert on and a pilot to boot who's seen it all.